signed to. Take out the jams, motherfucker! Kick out the jam, yeah, kick out the jam.
Welcome back, everyone, to the, I guess, the Sweet 16 edition of the Walk-Ons podcast. Matt Jones, we just had a court storming in the NIT tournament. Clemson beat Belmont and rushed the court. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I didn't see it, but, you know, I kind of think Clemson should storm the court whenever they do anything. So, and Siena, I believe, rushed the court last night in the CBI, which strikes me as even worse. But you know what? Again, my problem with court storming is only when good programs do it. The rest of them, I got no problem with.
But, like, what's the cutoff? I mean, you talk about good. Are we talking just, like, the Blue Bloods can't rush the court? Is that what the deal is?
Yes, the Blue Bloods can't. And if you've won a national title in the last decade, the Blue Bloods can't ever. Unless, you know, like when Indiana did it against Kentucky, that's a blue blood on blue blood crime, and it was a last second shot, so I looked past it. But then when they did it against Wisconsin, I thought that was, you can't do that.
What about, how does that rank with Wake Forest rolling their quad when they fired Jeff Bezdelic? Or he stepped down,
excuse me. Wait, I saw that. Is that not like the, that's like the meanest thing I've ever seen. Right. You know, it's not enough that you're leaving. We're going to you know, have a celebration. I actually felt sorry, and I wouldn't know Jeff Bezdelic from anyone. But I've always thought Wake Forest fans, consistently they believe they should be better than they have a right to be. And so I tend to not like them for some reason.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think people around here in North Carolina have gone that direction in the last few years. But yeah, I'm with you, man. I just kept picturing, like, Bezdelic carrying the big, like, Tupperware totes from his office through the quad while you know, toilet paper is hanging off exactly. All the trees.
Yeah, he's got his box. He's got, like, a cardboard box that he's walking just with sad look on his face. Well, I guess we need to talk about the weekend of games. And I mean,
do we really want to, I mean, can we just not talk about it?
No, I think we should. I mean, this is allegedly a college basketball podcast. So I guess we start with Kentucky, Wichita State, because I do think that is the biggest storyline of the weekend. Well, actually, let's do that. Let's talk storylines. Kentucky, Wichita State, I think would be the biggest story. Is the second biggest story Duke losing to Mercer, probably?
I would say so. I mean, there are obviously, you know, higher seeds that lost, but it's Duke and it's Mercer.
Yeah.
And it's in Raleigh.
Kentucky, Wichita State. Was that the best second round? I mean, obviously there are buzzer beaters every year, and some years better than other. But as far as like a quality game, can you remember a better first weekend game than that one?
You know, it's funny. It was a great game, and I'm not going to take anything away from it because it was such a joy to watch. But other than the last half of the day on Sunday, the first two rounds, or excuse me, the second and third rounds, were unbelievably entertaining. I mean, I thought it was just such a great opening weekend of the tournament that all the greatness just kind of runs together. And I mean, I feel really strongly that UK Wichita State game was awesome, but there was just so much awesome over the first week.
No, there was. I agree with you, but I did think, here's the difference with Kentucky Wichita State. The rest of the games were awesome and compelling in sort of a story sense. But I'm not sure how great the play was in very many of the games. Like, I thought Oregon-Wisconsin was really well played. But in general, I thought the games were kind of more interesting than they were well played. Like, think about, like, NC State-St. Louis. which was really interesting, but I don't think you could call it well played.
Right.
Kentucky-Wichita State, though, was played on a really high level. I watched it again today. It was on replay, and I watched the whole thing. And I'm amazed. I watched that Kentucky team play all year, and I never saw them play like that. And I'm amazed at how well both teams played. It was such a high level. Both teams shot 55% from the floor in the NCAA tournament. That just doesn't happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, two really good teams, and obviously it brings up the discussion, which I'd love to get into, is the idea of Wichita State being the number one team in the country, having to play eight-seeded Kentucky, who was the preseason number one, in the second round. I mean, just at first glance, without even paying attention to anything else, that seems wrong on the surface.
Right? Of course it's wrong. I mean, I said this when we did our show last week. Who got screwed when the brackets came out? And the answer was Wichita. It's not Kentucky and it's not Louisville, because if they're good enough, they'll make up for their screwing. But Wichita, unlike Kentucky and Louisville, had done nothing wrong during the year. And you cannot tell me that objectively, and this gets into some problems with the way they seed this tournament, if you decide Kentucky's an eight, how do you at that point then not recognize that they're the best eight by far and put them like in Virginia's bracket? How do you put them with Wichita? You just can't, right?
Yeah, and I think we've talked about this before, and really, you know, last year I had a similar beef with Duke's two seed as Louisville as the one. Is it was like, let's geographically reward Duke by putting them in that region, but while we're doing that, we're giving them the best team in the tournament as well. And I think, well, so by rule, they couldn't have been in Florida's bracket, right?
Who, Kentucky? Yeah, they couldn't have been in Florida's bracket. And here's what they should have done. Let's be honest. All right, Kentucky shouldn't have been an eight. Not even because of them, but because of how good they could be. You put them as a seven, and you put them with Villanova. That's what you do. If you're trying to make a fair tournament, you recognize Villanova sucks, and I don't know why in the world they're a two seed. Put Kentucky as a seven and see what happens. You don't put them with 35-0 Wichita, who's probably one of the three or four best teams in the tournament, and now they're out.
Yeah, I see your point. I think to a fault, the NCAA's the selection committee looks too hard at let's get the seed right, and then once they get that seed, it's really difficult to fit the pieces together.
But the seed isn't right.
See, I disagree. I disagree.
No, they're not. The seed's not right, because if you wanted to have a seed that was justifiable in terms of seeding teams, wouldn't you use the KenPom ratings? I mean, if there's one thing we've learned, no statistic has a better correlation to NCAA tournament success than the KenPom, right?
Yeah, see, I think if we're gonna use statistics, and this is my beef with when we go into like all conference teams and all the different crazy methods people use to vote for those, if you're going to rely on KenPom, for example, just let KenPom be the seeding. Like, don't even...
I'd be fine with that. But, I mean, I think you'd have to... You do have to adjust, I think, for... Because KenPom, the one weakness, and I bet they'll fix it. They'll fix this at some point, is KenPom does need to have some control for winning, okay? Because it doesn't. It is all about games. Like for KenPom, you could be 25. Well, you could be Tennessee. I mean, look, Tennessee's sixth in the KenPom, and they're 24-12 because there's no anything about actually winning. Right. So that needs to be factored in. But if you factor that in, I'd say just use them, and I'd be fine with it. You'd get a better tournament, don't you think?
That'd be fine with me. And I don't want human intervention if you're going to rely so heavily on statistics. Like, and that's my. You know, I don't want them using the RPI because that is flawed.
But that's using bad statistics.
Right.
And it's nothing about statistics. It's about using the wrong statistics.
And I agree with you on KenPom that it's been, you know, pretty accurate over the years. But if you're going to use that, like I said, just get humans out of it entirely and just go with a snake bracket based on KenPom. That's fine with me, whatever. But yeah, I think the big argument for Kentucky is you look at a team like UMass, who was a six, which was a joke. And then kind of the point that I've been making that I haven't gotten a lot of agreement on, but I still feel really strongly, is if you just take away everything but the numbers, you've got a team like Pitt, who was a nine seed. They had a better resume than Kentucky did, but Kentucky would destroy Pitt if they played each other.
That's why I feel like – I see, but I feel like you can combine it all. Okay, again, sit down and look at Kentucky's resume, and you would say, okay, that's the resume of a 6-8 seed. Don't say that's definitely – because, see, again, I've said – yeah, I've said in these conversations, they, like, sit there and hold the bottom seven and the top eight and really debate them, and there's, like, a sliver of difference between them. Don't do that. Use the numbers and use the resumes to get like ballpark. Okay, so these are generally the ones or twos, and these are generally the threes or fours, and then use some common sense. And if you do that, I think you end up with a better bracket.
Yeah. One comment that you made that I really wish the committee would take a hard look at is you said – it'd be a fairer tournament if there had been a seven seed. I really wish that the committee would actually look at making it a fair tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they do. I don't think that – I mean, I think it enters into it a little bit, but it's not the number one goal, and I wish that were the goal. I wish they would say, look, Kentucky's been weird. So we don't want to, like, reward Kentucky for being uber-talented and underachieving, but we need to recognize that Kentucky is Kentucky – and we need to not potentially punish teams like Wichita that have done everything we could ask for this year. And that's what they did.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. And we talked about it a little bit on our last show, how the committee really looks at geography too much.
Yeah.
And
as far as the game itself, though.
The game itself was awesome.
It was an awesome game. And do you agree, like, anyone – I mean, I know everyone said this now, and it's sort of trite, but anyone who thought Wichita wasn't for real, they clearly were, right?
Yeah, but I've got a problem with that. First of all, Wichita State was for real before that game even
started. I agree with you. But a lot of people just hadn't seen him play.
Right. They
just hadn't seen him play.
Right. And I really didn't start paying attention to them until the end of the year when I was kind of you know me and the little guy. I was kind of cheering for them to lose a game down the stretch, but they just wouldn't. They would find ways to go on these runs that would just bury teams. Like teams would play them close, and then boom, it's a 10-12 point lead. It's a 14 point, and then it's over. But it's a really good basketball team. The only problem that I have with the take on Wichita State coming out of that game was, you can't say Wichita State was for real. They justified their seed without saying that it was an absolute choke that they're out in the second round.
No, because Kentucky's not an eight seed. I mean, if they had lost to Gonzaga, then you're right. But Kentucky no one can see that Kentucky team and say the way they're playing today is the equivalent of an eight seed.
So you switch jerseys. Right, you make Kentucky the one seed, and you make Wichita State the eight seed with the same players, the same talent.
But neither one of them's an eight seed.
You're missing my point, though. Like, regardless of the seed, that's who they played in the second round. You switch those jerseys, Kentucky is getting murdered this week in the media.
Well, I don't know. Not if you watch the game. I mean, there's both teams. I mean, who's going to see Klay Anthony early and say that kid's not an NBA player after watching that game? Nobody. I mean, but
undefeated Kentucky, number
Wichita,
one team.
But Kentucky, an undefeated Kentucky team would be in the SEC. To be undefeated in the SEC would have required them to be even a lot better than Wichita State is. I mean, an undefeated Kentucky team would have rolled both. I mean, we're now getting into a metaphysical world here. But a Kentucky team that's good enough to go undefeated with the schedule they played would have been a team that would roll everybody in this tournament. So, yes, then if they only won by two, you'd say it's disappointing. But an undefeated Kentucky team would not have only beaten Wichita by two.
Yes, yeah, I still think you've got – you've got to forget that it's Wichita State, and I think the reason they're getting a pass is because they're Wichita State. But you have an undefeated number one ranked team.
but an undefeated number one ranked team in the Missouri Valley Conference. That matters.
Oh, okay. You just said they were for real, though.
They are they're a for real contender, but you're holding them to a standard. Like, the undefeated really should go out the window, because if they were in any of the big conferences, including the SEC, let's say they played Kentucky's schedule, Wichita loses 5 or 6 games, probably. So, but a 5 or 6 loss team can still win the NCAA tournament. So when I say they're for real, I'm not saying they're one of the best teams that ever played basketball, but I'm saying that they were a for real team that was a contender to win it all.
Okay, because of the players they have on the team, right?
Yes, and the way they play. Yes.
That's the point that I'm trying to make. If you switch resumes, right? If it makes you feel better, switch schedules. Kentucky plays Wichita State schedule.
And
goes undefeated.
I don't know if they went undefeated, but they probably don't lose more than 2.
No, for the sake of my argument here, I'm saying they go undefeated.
Okay.
They're getting a pass because it's Wichita State. If that had been Kentucky, that it lost as a 1 seed to an 8, regardless of how good that 8 really is, they're getting murdered this week.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that. But look, the point is still the same. The point is there are 7 teams that legitimately have a chance to win this title, and one of them is out. Okay, that's my point, because of the way they bracketed. To me, Florida, Arizona, Michigan State, Louisville, Kentucky and Michigan really have it. Actually, 2 teams are out, because Kansas, I thought, had a shot too. So 8 teams could win. Kansas and Wichita State are now out. And in Kansas's case, it's because Joel Embiid got hurt. And in Wichita State's case, it's because they had to play one of the other teams that has the talent to win it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I firmly believe that if you're the number one team in the country, you don't lose in the second round.
But that's not fair, Ben, because it matters who you play. I mean, let's go back to the 92 Duke team or 91 Duke team that beat UNLV. If the committee had bracketed them in the second round, it still wouldn't have meant UNLV wasn't the second best team.
I'm not saying they're not the second best team.
Second best team. But my point is, you can't just be simplistic and go, well, they lost in the second round. It matters who they lost to. That matters.
Yeah, I'm still going to remember them as chokers.
Okay, well, that's just because you're biased. All right, anyway, Kentucky won. The other best games of the weekend. Well, first of all, teams that look better than I thought. All right. I was impressed with how good. I think the only team that looked excellent from start to finish the whole weekend was Arizona. Is that fair?
I put all 3 Pac-12 teams in that category. I think UCLA looks strong, and I thought Stanford looked strong.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, Stanford sucks, though. They're not going to win the title. I mean, they may get to the Elite Eight, but they're not winning. I mean, I'm talking about teams that can win the title. Stanford, you're right, had a great weekend. And UCLA may have played itself to where we need to consider them as a team that can win the title. But, you know, Stanford's still Stanford. I mean, I sat there courtside and watched Stanford-Kansas. I never felt like Stanford was good.
Right.
It's not like Kansas was bad.
And I don't think they can win. I'm just saying in terms of the teams that looked good from start to finish against the teams that they played, I'd rank them up there. I mean, Arizona. I'm not arguing that Arizona wasn't. I'd also throw UCLA in there, and I thought Stanford.
Who looks better than Baylor? I mean, Baylor played 2 quality teams and beat them both down.
They destroyed Creighton. Destroyed Creighton.
And they were up 15 on Nebraska the whole game, basically. Virginia. If you take away the first half against Coastal Carolina, I was impressed with how much they destroyed Memphis. Right? I mean, that's a pretty thorough beatdown of a team that on paper should have been able to play with them because of their athleticism.
Yeah, you look at the 1 versus 8 games or 1 versus 9 games. 3 number ones that won looked dominant, and Memphis was probably the second best of those number 8-9 seeds.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also, listen, I told you on the show last week, I thought Tennessee would go to the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. You know, they're legit, and they can beat anyone in that Midwest bracket. Now, they could also lose, but they're tough. And if they're in the Final Four, it would not shock me.
So is this the third year in a row that a team from the first four has made it to the Sweet 16, I think?
Well, obviously Wichita last year. Were they? Wait a minute. Was Wichita? No, VCU. Who was it last year?
Who was in the first
four? No, Ole Miss. Ole Miss came from the – no, because they won the conference. I better shut up. You're right. That's happened.
Well, 2 years ago, it was VCU made it to the Final Four from the first four.
Yeah.
Last year, I'm pretty sure one of the teams made it to the Sweet 16, and then this year, obviously, Tennessee is doing that.
Well, Tennessee, I think NC State could have if they hadn't choked. I think Louisville was ripe for the taking if it hadn't been St. Louis that they played.
Yeah, St. Louis is not very good.
But talk about NC State, because you love to troll NC State. How bad of a choke is that?
It was pretty bad. So I looked it up, and the three triangle area teams, Duke, State, and Carolina, had a combined 26-point lead with 5 minutes left in all three of their games. State was up, 16 of those 26?
Yeah.
So that was a pretty colossal choke job in that game. But
so what's the reaction there? Are State fans, jumping off a cliff?
Yeah, they're still not over it. There's still no nerve. I mean, you try to talk and be funny about it, and you know, you've been down here, Matt. You know that when a Duke or a UNC or a State loses, there's that added tension until the other teams lose as well.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a pressure release when UNC lost that game on Sunday, but yeah, you still talk to State fans and they're upset about it. But I think they just died. I mean, you played. You played Saturday in the ACC tournament, then you had to go to Dayton and play in the first four, and then you had to fly to Orlando and play that game. So they played, three games in 6 days in three different cities. That's tough for a team that's not very deep.
Well, and
I think the bottom just fell out, but they're better than that. They should have won that game.
Get free throws, and Tennessee did it. So,
yeah.
It was interesting. I was amazed at how poorly the ACC as a whole did. I mean, I never bought that it was by far the best conference or even in the contention. It was probably third. But for all of those teams to collapse as thoroughly as they did, I mean, Florida, you expect Pitt to lose to Florida. But yeah. But Syracuse losing the way they did, and Carolina and Duke. I mean, we have to talk about Duke. How did you lose to Mercer? I knew Duke was available to be picked off. I thought Tennessee would pick them off. But how does Mercer beat them?
Yeah, I mean, and really looking at Duke's entire season, it was. They were the one team, I thought, in the ACC, other than Virginia, who's still moving on, but they were the one team who had the pieces to make a run. But you look at the results they had during the year, and they lost that game against Mercer like four times during the year.
But then they always hung on and won, right?
No. They lost. You look at the loss at Notre Dame. You look at the loss at Clemson.
But those are road games. I mean, you can lose to bad teams on the road, but to lose in Raleigh to Mercer,
yeah, that was that atmosphere was definitely not a home atmosphere.
What was the team that almost beat them in the non-conference at Cameron? Was it
Cameron? It was Vermont. Almost beat them there.
Yeah,
ECU almost beat them there as well. But Vermont
was the kind of game. That's the kind of game I guess it was. I just was surprised. I mean, I do think it's interesting to see coaches that are considered to be legendary coaches, and they should be because they've done a lot, but just continue to lose to these I mean, Coach K's lost to Mercer and Lehigh in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Or 3 years. That's hard for me to really process, right?
No, this one's a lot more difficult, I think. That team that lost to Lehigh was not a good team, and that was actually one of I would go ahead and say it right now without even any hint of sarcasm. That year was one of Coach K's best years as a coach because that team was not good. That team had a lot of problems. This team had like all the talent just right there to go make a run, and they never, you know, really put it together except for a game or two here and there. But it, this so
is Krzyzewski not recruit these one and done guys? I mean, he's got two of them coming in next year. And again, now he's a small sample size, but when you're talking about one and done guys that are clearly the day they come in, one and done guys. I mean, how many guys they had go one and done? Jabari, Kyrie, Austin Rivers. Who else have they had?
Luol Deng.
Okay, but Deng wasn't certain when he came in.
Right. Okay. So you mean like those guys that were obvious one and dones, right?
Yeah. So if you talk obvious one and dones, he's had three, and I think you have to say that all three of them. Again, Jabari's great, don't get me wrong. But all three of them, the teams have been somewhat disappointing.
Yeah, that 2011 team was, well, I would say the season ended in disappointment because that team should have gone further than the Sweet 16. But that team, if that team had stayed healthy all year, that would have been an all-time team at Duke.
It could have been, although do we know Kyrie Irving would have been good?
Yeah, he was the best player in college basketball before he got hurt.
Okay, fair enough. I wonder sometimes, like the Duke culture, this is what I'm getting at. The Duke culture is it. See, they just got a commitment from Luke Kennard, who was down to Kentucky and Duke. And he's a lifelong Kentucky fan. And he picked Duke yesterday. And in the end, I think the reasoning was he's just a better fit for the Duke culture, all right? He's a kid who's very, very talented. He expects to be in college for a while. And he came to Duke, and he just sort of fits in there. But one and dones are almost, by definition, different than the Duke culture. And I just wonder if it makes sense for them to get those kids. In some ways, Rodney Hood is a one and done, sort of. A one and done in the program.
Right.
Does that make sense for Coach K?
And he was one that, again, was expected to be one and done. They didn't bring him in thinking that he'd be here longer than a year. I think it's interesting because it works if you have veterans that can blend with those one and dones. That 2011 team had that. The Austin Rivers team did not, and then this team did not. I mean, and you look at Kentucky. They won the national championship with a class of really good freshmen, but they had veterans on that team. And then next year, they're in the NIT. But isn't
it also, though, about – doesn't Coach K do the best? If you look at his teams, aren't his best teams when his best player is a junior or senior? Not just when he has juniors or seniors, because he's not going to do a Cal thing. He's not going to bring in five of these guys.
Right.
So – isn't it the case, though, that he does best if his best player is a junior or senior? Cal's best player needs to be a freshman because Cal's getting the most talented players in America. But it looks to me like Krzyzewski's better if his guy – he'd rather have his guy be John Shire than be Jahlil Okafor.
I think he has to have a Shire type on the team to do well. But in terms of the – makeup of the team, he can absolutely succeed with one or two freshmen who are.
But can he do it if that's the best player?
If it's the best player, yeah. If it's the leader on the team, no. I mean,
that's the same thing.
No, it's not, because you look at
on great teams, it is the same thing.
You look at the back-to-back national championship years. The best player on the team was Grant Hill.
Okay, well, but no, Leitner was a national player of the year. I mean, Duke fans like to make that argument, but really the best player was Grant Hill. Christian Leitner was the national player of the year. He was the best player. I mean, Grant Hill is a better, you know, by the time he was done, you can't. Leitner was the best. But Leitner's one. I hate Leitner, okay? But he's one of the best college players of all time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's no slouch at all. But, you know, that senior leadership, I think, is important. And I think his biggest problem was not recruiting Austin Rivers or Kyrie or whoever. His biggest problem was recruiting Josh Hairston and having that as your senior leader in a year that you could go on to win the national championship. I mean, he plays those guys.
Yeah, but see, I don't think – see, this is where you and I disagree, and this is probably a function of me being around Cal so much, but I think your leader has to be your best player. I don't think guys listen – I think guys inherently listen to the players who are the best. They just do. And you, they don't listen to the white guy who's the fourth best player. They just don't. they listen to the best guy. And you can't be great unless your best player is a leader. And I think and my point is, I don't know if Krzyzewski, I don't know if freshmen are really good leaders in his system.
Right.
But you know, I mean, I guess time will tell.
They're not. Freshmen do not lead well in his and it's, you know, he's very military, obviously, and you have to have defined roles. And if you're relying heavily on freshmen, you've got to work them into those roles unless you have strong leaders. And I think that's the big issue. I don't think it's a mistake going after these guys. What do you want them to do? Not recruit good players?
No, I don't. I just wonder if maybe, you know, he's gone all in here with these last couple years with this Jahlil Okafor and Jabari Parker. And I just wonder if that's the right way, if that's the right method for him. Or does it make sense for him to get Luke Kennard? Luke Kennard is the perfect Duke player. And it just seems to me maybe that he just does better if he has those guys instead of Jabari Parker, Rodney Hood, and Jahlil Okafor. But right. We'll see. I'll see what happens next.
Yeah, to answer your question, and I know we don't spend too much time talking about Duke. To answer your question, I don't know who he should have gotten on his team that fits that role over the last 3-4 years.
Yeah, I think he's been hurt, but in part, who's really been hurt is Carolina. But the emergence of Kentucky and then Kansas as recruiting juggernauts has affected Duke. I think it's really hurt Carolina, don't you? I mean, that used to be Carolina.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You and I have had lots of conversations about this, that the rise of Kentucky, the rise of Kansas, I'm even going to throw, I mean, no, it's funny to say it right now, I would even throw Indiana in that boat as guys who have gotten, or teams that have gotten those high-profile players that Roy seemed to always get at least one of them, has really hurt UNC. This class coming in next year at Duke is really the first class that Coach K has gotten the guys that he wants. I mean, he's missed on
a bunch. You're right.
All kinds of players.
Yeah, and Cal, it's interesting. Cal, he's now lost a couple to Duke and Kansas, but Cal doesn't lose a recruit unless it's to Duke or Kansas. I don't think he's lost a recruit to Carolina since he's been here, and that's amazing because Carolina used to own Kentucky. Right.
Yeah, the only ones that I can think of, I mean, I'm really and you know better than I do. I'm trying to think about guys who Kentucky just flat out lost.
Lost a couple. I mean,
you look at Muhammad, right?
They lost Andrew Wiggins. They lost Okafor. They wanted Okafor. They lost. I mean, if you're talking about guys they really want, they don't lose many. I'm trying to think who else they lost that they really wanted.
I mean, I know they were in it for Kyrie, but they had point guards.
Yeah, but I don't think I don't think he ever thought he was going to get here.
Yeah, I'm talking about guys that it was like, you know what, this is my guy. And, you know, Wiggins and Muhammad fit that bill.
Muhammad, who are you talking about?
Shabazz.
Shabazz. Yes, he wanted Shabazz. Yes, that's a good one. Wiggins, Shabazz, Okafor. Those are the three that stick out. I think those are the three that it bought. If you were to ask me what three recruits has he lost that it's bothered him the most,
yeah,
it was probably those three. I think Shabazz probably bothered him more than any. And I guess in the end, what did it matter?
Right. You know, right.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, he'll recruit a guy like the kid that went to Arizona, Caleb Tarzewski or whatever.
Yeah.
He wanted that kid, but then that kid kind of never really – so they just sort of moved on. That's kind of how they do it. And then they lost Kennard. I mean, Kennard the other day, they don't lose too many. All right, let's look at the Sweet 16 here and let's predict these games. Florida against UCLA. You know, everybody focuses on Kentucky-Louisville, and we'll talk about that one. But Florida-UCLA has become – a winner's going to the Final Four, right?
Who's on the other side? Dayton and Stanford? Yeah.
Final Four, so who you got?
That's a national semifinal game. Or, I'm sorry, a regional final game, I would think. I mean, Florida's awesome. UCLA looked good in the first two rounds, and they looked really good in the Pac-12 tournament. I still think Florida's probably a deeper, better team.
And UCLA looked good playing Tulsa and Stephen F. Austin.
Oh. Yeah, they. I mean, I don't know if you saw it, but in that Pac-12 final against Arizona, they looked.
I didn't see any of that.
No. Yeah, they looked like a more talented team than Arizona did.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Anderson is a. I've always thought he's taken a while to get going, but I've always liked him a lot. And the Ware brothers are not as stinky as they were at Carolina. So
or under how? I mean, they're actually playing well with the new coach.
So I'm going to take Florida, but Florida, you know. Florida hasn't looked great in a while. They've looked just good enough for a month and a half. And so it wouldn't shock me if they're asleep at the wheel and lose this game.
Yeah.
Stanford and Dayton, I honestly don't care because Dayton, so what, and Stanford is just big, tall, goofy guys. And either of these teams will get mauled in the regional final. So I don't.
I'm with you. I think Stanford's probably better than. I mean, you look at Dayton's path, and it's kind of funny because they beat Ohio State, they beat Syracuse. You just say that to a guy on the street, like, hey, this team beat Ohio State and Syracuse. But people who actually watch college basketball, those were two of the more fraudulent big name teams,
and they were both right for the picking.
Yeah,
you know, but they picked them. Good for them.
Yeah.
Stanford, though, I will tell you this. If Stanford were to play Florida, Florida might win that game by 150 points. UCLA and Stanford might be close because they're conference teams that know each other. But Florida will beat the tar out of Stanford.
Yeah.
Because Stanford is so slow.
Yeah.
I mean, I sat there and watched them and thought against Kansas, Bill Self, you're the worst coach that's ever existed. Kansas was better than Stanford at every single position and lost. And it ain't like Johnny Dawkins is Phil Jackson, right?
I mean, they've had a really up and down year. I haven't paid that much attention to him, but wasn't he kind of on the hot seat at some point this year?
I mean, you watch them play. It's like one uncoordinated dude after another, but somehow they would just roll Kansas. Andrew Wiggins disappointed me in that game. I mean, he could have had any shot he wants, and he just wouldn't take him.
Yeah, I think he had six attempts or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that was. It's really surprising to watch. So in terms of Stanford Dayton, pick one. I'm going to pick apathy.
I'll pick Stanford to win that game and then get smashed like you just said.
Yeah, I kind of think you're right. All right, so Virginia and Michigan State. I was very confident about Michigan State until Virginia played well. I'm still going to take Michigan State, but maybe it'll be a game.
I think Virginia's going to win.
You do?
Yeah, I do. Man, I was really skeptical about Virginia heading into the ACC tournament, but getting to see them 3 days in a row up close, that's a really difficult team to defend. Which is funny because you always hear about their offense. It's really hard to play defense against Virginia.
Yeah, well, I'm taking Michigan. Come on, I mean, still it's Virginia. There comes a point. You've heard me do this for 2 years. There comes a point that there comes games where it's the okay. This team is this, and that team is that. Right. This is the time where Michigan State is Michigan State, and Virginia is Virginia. Isn't this the time that happens?
I feel that way about Michigan State. I don't think that they're that good.
But they're always good. They may not be as good as like every team person in the country picking them to win the title. But they're Michigan State. This is their time of year. When has it been Virginia's time of year? 1982?
Yeah, before I was born.
I mean, this is Michigan State's time. They win this game because they're Michigan State and they're Virginia. And in a couple years, maybe Virginia's that team, but they're not yet, right?
Yeah, I'm just not. So this is more of a. I've seen Virginia up close, and I don't believe in Michigan State. That's what I'm going with. But I don't think either one of them make the Final Four.
Well, does that mean you're picking Iowa State?
I definitely would have picked Iowa State before the injury. But I mean,
so you're picking UConn?
Yeah, freaking, which I don't like at all.
No, you're not.
I don't like it all. But yeah, I'm picking UConn.
That's a terrible call. Iowa State will beat UConn.
I hope so.
15. The only thing UConn has going for them is they're going to be playing in New York. And that'll be – wouldn't you say that'll be mostly UConn fans in the arena?
You'd have to think there's going to be just a ton of UConn – Virginia fans have been just, like, stupid in following this team lately. But, yeah, it's going to be all UConn fans. I think this is that one bracket that like Napier is going to carry them out of it, and that's the only he's the only player that stands out to me that is like a superstar in that bracket.
Well, this is one of two brackets though that you could see any team making it, right? Like any of the four could make
it. Or none of the four. if that were a possibility,
it would be hard for none of the four.
I you know what? From Selection Sunday, I've hated the East bracket.
Yeah.
Like none of those teams look appealing to me.
Well, I sort of agree with you. All right. Move to the West. I mean, I would assume this is basically Arizona, San Diego State. This is the part where I say San Diego State is the worst team in the tournament and maybe in God's creation. So I take Arizona to win by double digits.
Yeah, first of all, their name is San Diego State, and they've beaten New Mexico State and North Dakota State. I mean, this doesn't even feel like the NCAA tournament to me.
And New Mexico State almost beat them with my man Sim Bular, which would have been awesome.
He found out. That was the problem.
It was. But, yeah, Arizona wins. Now, Wisconsin, who has, to be fair, has looked very good against Baylor. Both those teams playing a lot better than I would have thought either of them would play. So this is the game of all the games in this regional. This is the one I don't know who to pick to win, because I'm generally a believer in don't ever believe in Wisconsin on anything. There are way, way too many white people. But they're playing really well, so I don't know.
And you also you have to feel that way about Baylor too, right?
Well, they don't have too many white people.
No, but they're always the team that you get so excited about, like this. Hey, this team's got a lot of talent. They're going to do this. They're going to do that, and then they don't. But man, always.
Here's the way I look at it. If Baylor beats Wisconsin, they could beat Arizona. But I think Wisconsin beats Baylor, and then Arizona crushes Wisconsin.
I can see that. We want to talk about interesting storylines or interesting games from the first weekend. Did you watch the Wisconsin American game at all?
No. Didn't Wisconsin win by 40, though?
Yeah, it was interesting in the sense that American had the lead in the first half, and then at halftime it was, I want to say, maybe 3 points or 4 points. And I think American only scored 8 points in the second half.
Wow.
So it was interesting you're watching a car drive off a cliff. That kind of interesting. It wasn't.
I think I saw that was the lowest rated game of the first round.
It had to have been. Well, I think it was during the Ohio State game.
Yeah, I think it was the least watched game of all, which is quite a statement, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about ratings for just a second. Kentucky-Wichita State, most watched game in 22 years on the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. You know, everybody always talks about college basketball being in trouble, but that's a pretty amazing thing if you think about it.
And they've done a good job this year of spreading out the games, especially the third round. The second round games, they did a good job of there's one game on and you're watching it.
Yeah.
They did a good job of that.
And I just think it feels like to me there are more people talking about it. I think the whole thing they did with the CBS Turner thing was really smart. You know, like I think having the games to where every game is on some channel has really helped the tournament. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, before, what are you relying on, cut-ins?
Yeah, and being in the area that they're showing it. And this one has made it so much better. And I know people hate this. I think Barkley and those guys help. I think they make it more exciting.
Yeah, I haven't minded them at all this year. I think they've been better. The first year they did it, it was brutal because it was obvious that they'd never watched any college basketball. I mean, it was plain to see that they just didn't know a thing about it. This year, I think they've been, but they were entertaining. And this year, they've been entertaining, but also a little bit more informed. And the studio shows, and I think Steve Smith and Grant Hill have been really good in the studio too.
And we get less Seth Davis, which is good for everybody.
And no Gottlieb.
He's going to be there now. He was out. He was in the games.
Oh no, he's going to be in the studio now.
Yeah, because they had him out in Spokane. Now he's going to be back in studio, I think, this week.
Which is good. I felt like I was missing the white man's perspective, so I'm glad that he's.
What about that one guy using the Hack a Pollock joke? Did you hear?
Oh my God! Yeah.
I didn't hear it live, but apparently he had to immediately come on the air and apologize.
I didn't see the apology.
I didn't know that Pollock was, I mean, I wouldn't have said Pollock, but I didn't know that that was like something you couldn't say.
I think it's one of those terms that like is probably not offensive to Polish people, but you and I hear it and you cringe like, sounds bad.
Sounds offensive. Like just the way you say it, Pollock, it just sounds offensive, but I don't know if it is. But here's, you know, I live in a state and I love Kentucky, and I know a lot of people listening to this are from Kentucky. And there will be people in Kentucky who always say to me, why can't I say X, right? So they'll talk about a lot of times like the N-word, and they'll say, if black people can say it, why can't I say it? And I'm always like, why do you want to say it?
Right.
Like if you say to me there are 7 words or 10 words you can't say, a lot of people go, well, why can't I say those 10? Well, I say, I got a lot of other words I can say. So I'll just give those 10 up, right? I'm okay with that. So I don't understand. Like, I heard a lot of people when he said Pollock say, well, why can't you say Pollock? And my question is, well, why do you need to? Do you have something in your heart that says I have to say Pollock?
Right.
The most times I've ever said that word in my life.
Look at Bob Knight today. I mean, his comment, right? About
rape? I mean, why would you say that? Well, I know why he would say it. He's an idiot.
Use a different word.
Yeah. I mean,
use pillage. Use whatever. I mean, come on.
Just don't say rape.
Right.
Right. Just, you know, use an analogy that doesn't involve Hitler. I mean, that's it. There's just little things. Just don't. And don't argue about why. Just don't.
And it's not hard.
I have a buddy. He's a nice guy. But he always does this to me about things like that. And it's usually he's big on racial stuff. And he's always like, well, if you tell me I can't say X, then what's next? You're going to tell me I can't say Jesus. And I'm like, no, that's a huge leap from the N-word to Jesus. And I will tell you, if we start going steps along the way, then I'll be on your side. But it's not a slippery slope from you can't say the N-word to you can't say Jesus Christ.
Right. Right, like not being able to say the N-word is taking away some personal freedom that you feel so strongly about.
Yeah, it's like, you know, anyway, I don't know how we got off on that. But, all right, so.
Wisconsin, we're talking about white people.
Yeah, that's right. Kentucky and Louisville, of course, here, you know, everybody is going insane. Did you see all the stuff with Mitch McConnell today?
Yes.
I mean, Mitch McConnell did not have a good day. So he puts out this campaign video that's supposed to, like, take advantage of the fact that it's basketball time here this week. And in the video, it shows Louisville celebrating the national title and what's supposed to be Kentucky, but instead he showed Duke.
Right, John Shire and Lance Thomas. Yeah.
How in the world, how that mistake was made, I'll never know. So he gets caught. They quickly take that image down, but they don't want to scrap the video because I'm sure they spent a lot of time on it.
Right, so then he commits a violation.
So they put in a picture of Julius Randle, which is an NCAA violation. So Kentucky has to declare an NCAA violation, send a cease and desist letter to Mitch McConnell, and Mitch McConnell ended up having what I would argue is a pretty horrible day.
Did he pull out of the race today? I mean, I would have.
It'd be interesting to see, like, will this hurt him? Because, you know, these kind of things usually are bigger deals to people who didn't like the guy anyway. But I will say this, if Kentucky had got, like, let's say Julius Randle couldn't have played Friday.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He would have had to drop out, right?
He would have had to move.
That would be funny if the United States Senate swung on Julius Randle not being able to play in the Sweet 16.
Just, that's, you tell me, Matt. You tell me. You're a pretty politically savvy guy. You're running for office. And you're up in Kentucky or down here in North Carolina, which you spent some time down here as well. Why do you even risk throwing in Duke or Carolina or Kentucky or Louisville in your package?
Because these people are out of touch. Like, and this is, listen, I'm liberal. I understand that. But this isn't an indictment of Mitch's politics, which I don't particularly like. But that's not why I'm saying this. The same would be true about, like, Harry Reid, I'm sure, in Nevada. He essentially doesn't live in Kentucky anymore, right? Like, he represents Kentucky, but he doesn't live here.
Right.
So he has no connection. College basketball is not a thing to him. Like, you know how when Obama fills out the bracket, you know he knows what he's talking about, right? When George Bush would talk about baseball, you knew he liked it. But when you have someone who doesn't like it and talks about it, you can tell, right? I mean, you can tell they don't know what they're talking about. So why even try? But they feel like they have to try.
Yeah, it's that cheap, like, icebreaker. Right? Yeah. I mean, like if I'm in Kentucky and I'm at, like, a dinner party and I'm trying to break the ice with someone, I will say, you know, hey, how about those Wildcats? You know, and that breaks it. But if we start talking about Kentucky basketball history, I'm not going to know anything.
Yeah, that would be like me being in Detroit and saying, how about the Red Wings?
Right.
Okay, when I said, how about the Red Wings, I just told you everything I know about the Red Wings.
And it's done.
And I have nothing else to say.
And there's no follow-up if they ask, like, oh, yeah, what's your favorite, you know, who's your favorite Red Wing?
Yeah, so you have to figure out, like, I think it's important for these politicians to feel like they're part of the like, he released this week so he could be part of the conversation of the state.
Right.
But he's not part of that conversation. A, he doesn't even live here. And B, he doesn't care about basketball. He's a U of L fan, but I think in the most casual sense of the word, right, fan. Right. So, you know, I don't understand why people feel the need to do that. That's why people sometimes say, well, why do they talk to Obama at these events? Well, he's a sports fan. You can tell. And you don't put other people on because they're not. I do ads for the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife. You remember we talked about this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know anything about fish or wildlife or departments. But rather than act like it, I just acknowledge it in the ads. And I think it makes it work because I'm not trying to be like, hello, I hunt and I fish and come hunt and fish with me. Right. I just say, I don't hunt and I don't fish, but you should because you will enjoy it, whereas I don't like to leave my house. And I think politicians should do the same thing.
Would I like to put bullets in animals? Yeah. But you know what? I saw the spot on mute because I just wanted to see, like, the clip. My favorite part of the ad was he's, like, holding up a rifle. That's my favorite.
He did. And that's also ridiculous because everyone that knows him knows he doesn't do that either, right? Like, he doesn't hunt. Does anybody think Mitch McConnell hunts? For what? I mean, you know, but that's the thing we make these politicians do. They have to act like they do all these things. I remember when John Kerry went duck hunting?
Yeah.
Does anyone believe he duck hunts? No. Of course he doesn't duck hunt. So why are you acting like you duck hunt? So anyway, Kentucky and Louisville. The state's going nuts here. Louisville looked bad. Kentucky looked good. But I still think the game is going to be down to the wire.
I think I was at a game when they played during the year. Kentucky won that. What happened in that game? Like, what was the
story? Well, it wasn't as good as they are now, but Kentucky won because of size. Basically, Julius Randle dominated the first half. He had 17 points, and then he cramped up and didn't play in the second half, and the Harrison twins dominated the second half. And it was basically because at every position, Kentucky was bigger. And if Kentucky wins, it'll be because of that again. At every position, Kentucky's bigger, and they would just take it inside and score.
So then why is Calipari kind of like pre-working the referees?
Because I think he believes that Louisville is the biggest fouling team in the country.
So they're pressure defense.
Yeah, that they basically grab your – like the rule changes that supposedly occurred.
Right.
Most people believe it was because of Louisville. Right, they just grab and all that stuff. And I think he's wanting – he knows he has a team that's soft with the ball anyway, and he wants to sort of say, hey, when they grab our arms, call it. Because they did call it in Rupp. Cats went to the free throw line a lot, and that's partially why they won.
Yeah, because they've been – well – probably not enough, but they've been a little bit more stringent on the perimeter, but have let a lot go down low. So that benefits Kentucky if the game's called that way? That benefits
Kentucky, I think, yeah. I mean, you know, Randle gets fouled a lot and it doesn't get called, but the Twins and Young are all good free throw shooters. So if they go to the line, I think that benefits Kentucky. And you know, they are, he also wants to get it in the refs' minds to call that. I think how this game's officiated will be a lot. Now, the biggest difference is Luke Hancock, when he played in December, he missed like 10 open threes. He was terrible. And now he basically kept them in the tournament in the first two rounds by hitting big threes in both games.
Yeah, especially the especially that first game.
I thought they might lose to Manhattan now.
I think they would. He hit that big three with like, what, a minute left or something along those lines?
And he hit a three to put him up three and then a three to put him up six. You know, he just is sort of – he just stands there, and when you're tired of guarding everybody else, he hits the three. That's kind of his role. Who do you think wins?
You know what? I haven't seen enough of Louisville this year to have a good feel for them. I've seen Kentucky way more than I've seen Louisville. Usually, I think when you see these rivalry games where one team where they only play once, I think it's difficult to win the second time. So based on that, I just got to go gut feel with Louisville. But that's a complete guess.
Are you there?
Yeah.
I didn't hear you. You went away. What? Who did you say?
Was it because I picked Louisville? Is that why you didn't hear me?
You did pick Louisville. Okay, I didn't hear you. So
yeah. So what I said is the only reason that I'm picking Louisville is I think when you've got a rivalry game that you play once, it's difficult for that team that won the first time to win the second game.
That's fair. I mean, I think that's fair. I'm going to pick Kentucky, but I don't. It's really close. Like I can't really figure out. I can't really get a notion of how the game is going to go. I was amazed at how well Kentucky played against Wichita. I mean, I would have thought for Kentucky to beat Wichita, Wichita just needed to be a fraud, right? I would have never believed Wichita could be good and then Kentucky would beat them.
Right.
So that game threw me off. So I don't know. I'm going to pick Kentucky, but I'm not confident about it. But it's interesting. I think both teams are very vulnerable, whoever wins, to lose the next one.
Right, because both of those two teams have looked good.
And Tennessee's a matchup nightmare. Tennessee's the only team in the bracket that Kentucky matches up poorly with. They actually match up great with Louisville and Michigan. And Michigan, it's weird. I think both Louisville and Kentucky in some ways would rather play Michigan
than Tennessee.
How about how good Tennessee is doing?
Yeah, the two head scratchers that we've talked about down here in this area were Tennessee destroying Virginia by like a million points, and then Tennessee losing to NC State. The beating Virginia makes much more sense now than losing to State.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. I mean, I think Kentucky. I think Tennessee is really good. I think Jarnell Stokes is really good. So that bracket could go anywhere. I'm going to pick Michigan over Tennessee, and then I'm taking Michigan to the Final Four, as much as that pains me. I think whoever wins Kentucky-Louisville, I think Michigan is going to be able to take advantage of all the energy spent on that Friday game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think Tennessee has looked really good, but This is like you were talking before about Virginia and Michigan State. Michigan's Michigan and Tennessee's Tennessee. And I think Michigan wins that game just because of that. And, yeah, I mean, you're playing Kentucky's run here is pretty ridiculous. I mean, Kansas State was okay. But you've got the number one team in the country undefeated. And then you get to play your rival who's playing really well right now in the next game. And then after that, you've got another game before you're in the Final Four.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It'll be weird. You know, it was like that in 2012, except Kentucky, that next game was for the title, so clearly they were going to get up for it.
Yeah.
You know? So we'll see. But so my Final Four, Michigan, Arizona, Michigan State, Florida, which is still the four I had to begin with. Do you have the same four that you had to begin with?
That at the beginning of the tournament?
Yes.
No.
So who was your four and who is it now?
My four before was I had Florida and Arizona, and I thought Duke was going to put it together coming out of the Midwest. And then I had Iowa State before the injury. So, you know, Duke obviously did not put it together. And I don't like Iowa State anymore after the injury.
So who's your four now?
I'd say Virginia, Michigan, Florida, and Arizona.
Virginia, Michigan, Florida, and Arizona. All right. Well, it's still been a great tournament, and we will see. You know, as we go from here, I think Kentucky. I like where Kentucky is. I still think Michigan State is my pick to win the whole thing. Who do you have as your pick to win it all?
I hadn't even made it that far yet, but if I had to pick one, I'd say Florida.
Yeah. I worry about Florida in this next game. I do. I think UCLA, they're vulnerable to UCLA. UCLA is a team built a lot like Kentucky, not quite as good, but built a lot like the Cats. So
we'll see. Yeah, and I don't know Florida as well as you do. That's just kind of, you know, I'm going off of paper. You've seen them up close a lot more than I have.
But Florida's a lot like the Louisville team last year in the sense of there's nobody great, but you're going to have to be pretty awesome to beat them.
To beat Florida.
And I'm not sure if there's a pretty awesome team in the tournament. You know what I mean? Like, right. Like last year's Louisville team, if it was a year where a really good team was in the tournament, they'd have lost. But I don't really think there was a real good team in the tournament. And I think that's kind of like that this year too.
If there's one thing that this tournament has shown me, it's that I have no idea who's going to win games. that's definitely the case. But I cannot remember a more fun first weekend probably in forever. I mean, the games were ridiculous.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, we touched on a lot of stuff here today. We got a little bit of everything. We'll do this again. Hopefully next week I'll be celebrating the Final Four and heading to – I guess Dallas. I didn't think I would ever have to go to Dallas again after going there earlier this year when Kentucky played Baylor. But who knows? It's still there in the realm of possibility.
Have you found the guy who got the 2014 National Championship Kentucky tattoo? Have you found him?
We do know him. He actually did an interview today in which he said, I don't look as stupid as you thought I did, do I?
He still looks pretty stupid. Regardless.
But not quite that stupid, right?
But go bet, right? Like, put $100 instead of spending $100 to get a tattoo. And I'll be honest, I don't even know how much a tattoo costs, but I'm assuming it's about that much. Go put $100 in Kentucky to win the tournament.
Well, fair enough. I'm with you. By the way, we just got kicked out of the media hotel, and they're looking to send us somewhere 25 minutes away.
Where are you now?
I'm in Kentucky now, but I was hoping to go. This is for Indianapolis.
Okay.
So I'm gonna have to figure out other options.
So not right now. You're getting, but like you were in the media hotel, and they bumped you.
Yeah, because they said, you know, whatever. So that kind of sucks. I'm kind of mad about that. That's a poor way to do it.